Brazil is rapidly emerging as one of the world's new major players. Its position, whether in global trade, international relations, or resource extraction, has changed dramatically. And we're joined now by Joseph Leahy, the Brazil Bureau Chief at the Financial Times. Very pleased to welcome him to our show for today's second Backstory segment. Hello.
Hi, Leonard. Thanks very much for having me.
Can you give us a sense of some of the major economic trends in Brazil? Hasn't there been a significant decrease in the poverty rate, for example?
Yes, yeah. I think one of the great differences of in Brazil compared to the other emerging markets such as China or India is exactly this, that this middle of the pyramid group, this middle class, has expanded rapidly over the past decade or so, and we've seen an incredible amount of wealth created at that level.
Well, why now? Hasn't Brazil been described for decades as the next big thing that never happened?
Yes, yeah, the old cliche about Brazil is it's the country of the future and always will be. But this time, you know, there's more hope. What happened over the past decade is we had two very good presidents. And we had we had increases in wages and transfers, welfare transfers, that encouraged people to send their kids to school. And we've seen a gradual growth of this middle class, known as the Class C in Brazil.
Despite the fact that the global economy is in trouble, and I'm sure Brazil is affected by that.
Yes, yeah. Brazil has survived very well the first crisis in 2008, and this one as well, it has also been hit by a slowdown from Europe. But the difference in Brazil is that while the industry has been slowing down, consumption is still quite strong in Brazil. So if you go to a shopping center in Brazil, you won't see many signs of the economy slowing down. You still see people shopping and taking out loans.
Is that because the government has resisted an austerity program?
Yes.
The rest of the world seems to be believing in that.
In Brazil, there's still some room. I think the key thing in Brazil is that interest rates have historically been very high. So the government's strategy this time is to try and lower those interest rates to stimulate demand and to try and get people to continue consuming. The other strange thing about
Brazil, they brought them down to 9%, which seems high by American standards at the moment, but is rather low by Brazilian standards.
By Brazilian standards, this is very near a 15-year low, believe it or not. I think it was in 2008 that interest rates were last at 8.75%, which was the lowest in 15 years. So even though these rates are very high, they're by Brazilian standards, they're quite low.
You were going to say another reason. Give us another reason when I interrupted you.
For Brazil continuing to grow. Brazil still has very low unemployment. Believe it or not, even as the U.S. is having trouble creating jobs, Brazil has record low unemployment right now.
Is that why Brazilian President Dilma Rousseff has an approval rating in the high 70s?
That's exactly why I think that she has it. Also, it's important to know that Dilma is basically the anointed successor of President Lula, who was an incredibly popular president when he left office in 2010.
Although when he was elected, everybody on the right complained that he was going to make the country into a communist state.
That's right. His rhetoric prior to taking office in 2002 was very far to the left. But gradually he moderated, and then when he took over office, he appointed people who were market-friendly, and gradually he built a level of trust and comfort with the markets. And now his party, the Workers' Party, is seen more as a centre-left party in the European mould than as an extreme right.
But hasn't Brazil been historically seen as a difficult country to govern? It's huge, first of all, and has an incredibly diverse population.
It is incredibly diverse, and when you go there and try and speak Portuguese with people from the northeast speak in a completely different accent that people in Sao Paulo can barely understand sometimes. So and also the levels of poverty range dramatically from the northeast to the south. So it is a difficult country to govern.
Before you went to Brazil, you were posted in Mumbai. India is obviously one of the other countries that has been seeing incredible growth. Is it at all similar?
The only thing that's similar about the two of them is, I think, the level of bureaucracy. Otherwise, they're very different countries. I suppose the other similarity is really that they've both been growing very, very rapidly, and they're trying to sort of manage that growth.
And Brazil has also been involved in international development projects. in Africa, for example, like the Chinese?
Yes,
don't they have a large area of their own? This is one of the largest countries in the world.
Brazil. One of the strengths of Brazil is its abilities in agriculture. So there's some similarities between Brazil in agriculture and Africa, and that's where we're seeing a lot of work from on the Brazilian side in Africa. Also, President Lula was a tireless diplomat. He went to Africa a lot, and he often spoke of Brazil as sort of an African country in a way, because more than half the population has ethnic African roots.
President Rousseff was in Washington this week. How did our meetings with President Obama go?
It was a bit of a, I think in total, it was a kind of a strange visit in a way. President Dilma complained quite a lot about U.S. monetary policy, which is not really in the remit of President Obama. But I think on the whole, it was more of a sort of a symbolic trip. It was a confidence-building trip. Under Lula, Brazil had tried to encourage a nuclear deal with Iran, a civilian nuclear deal that didn't go down very well with Washington. So I think at the moment, what we're seeing is a bit more confidence-building between the two.
On your blog for the Financial Times, you noted that the U.S. and Brazil look set to resolve one of the longest-running disputes over whether to recognize each other's national liquors as distinctive. Why is that issue so important?
Yes, this is a crucial issue in Brazil. The importance of cachaça is very important. I'm just being a little bit facetious there, but...
But in this country, we demand that bourbon be only from a certain part of Kentucky. So can't Brazil, and we recognize the fact that champagne has to come from the Champagne area of France. Why would this? We have different rules for Brazil.
Yes, I think this is correcting a long-running a problem, which was that cachaça was seen as a form of rum, whereas in fact cachaça is cachaça. It's a particularly Brazilian drink. And I think Brazil was keen to unwind this level of protection.
Over the years, South Americans have complained that the United States has had exerted too much power, too much pressure. Is that something that's still felt in Brazil?
I think Brazil these days. I think what Brazil wants from the U.S. is really recognition of its growing role as not just a regional power, but also a global power. Not a military power in that sense, but a global power in different issues such as the environment and trade. I think Brazil would love to see a little bit more recognition from the U.S.
But isn't the United States doing that? On Monday, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton announced that the United States is supporting Brazil having a seat on the U.N. Security Council.
Yes, I'm not sure whether that was a full expression of support from her. I think she said that she was... she couldn't see a world without Brazil on there. Something along those lines. She didn't exactly support it as wholeheartedly as the U.S. did India. And this is something that Brazil always grates on Brazil, because Brazil doesn't start wars, it doesn't do the wrong thing, but it never gets the kind of recognition that it feels like it deserves.
Maybe they should develop a nuclear weapon.
At one point they were doing that, but they abandoned that. And I'm sure there's some people in Brazil who have that view,
Argentina announced recently that it was nationalizing its oil industry, a move that hasn't played well in Europe or the United States. How has the Brazilian government reacted to the move?
The Brazilian government has also had its own problems with Argentina on different trade issues, and I think it's tried to distance itself quite a lot from what Argentina has done. Brazil has some, if you like, protectionist instincts, but these are more isolated towards particular industries, and I really don't think that we would see this kind of thing happening in Brazil.
Petrobras,
yeah.
The Brazilian oil company is a nationalized company, isn't it?
It's
owned by the state.
It's owned by the state. That's right, but. But it's also listed on the stock exchange and is seen as a well-governed company.
Well, the country is also engaged in a high-profile struggle with Chevron over two oil spills, which have resulted in the government asking company officials to hand over their passports.
Yes.
And also there is a possibility of a 31-year prison term for George Buck, who is Chevron's head in Brazil.
Yeah, this is something that this is a very interesting case, because the second leak by Chevron was only, I think, less than a liter of oil. So when you compare that to the Macondo disaster, in the Gulf of Mexico, it's kind of a drop in the ocean, literally. So what this highlights is that sometimes in Brazil, even though governance and regulation have improved, you still sometimes get these anomalies which burst out into the open.
But it may also be that Brazil wants to control its own oil reserves.
And there's
a kind of a war with the international oil companies. Listeners have been writing in, and there are a couple of questions. Has the expansion of wealth in the country trickled down to the favelas?
It has indeed. In Rio, one of the interesting things, you may have heard of this program called the pacification program of the favelas. Now, after the police move into these favelas, if the program is done well, people are able to start selling their houses for a lot more, and we've seen actual rapid price inflation of homes in the favelas as a result of this.
What about a real estate bubble in general because of the Olympics?
This is another thing that's happening in Rio, and particularly in the southern suburbs, the famous ones, Ipanema, Leblon, and those suburbs. We've seen an extraordinary increase in prices.
Well, Olympics, preparation for Olympics can be quite expensive, and we usually read somewhere during the preparations that they never get really payback what was spent on building the roads and all the rest, although there's the advantage of the infrastructure being improved 4 years after the Olympics are gone. But can Brazil afford this? It was a difficult thing for China, which is a much larger economy.
I think for Brazil, this is the jury's definitely still out on this. Just to give you an example, I'm going to talk about the World Cup because that's before the Olympics. They are rebuilding the stadium in Sao Paulo for the World Cup, and they've already gone 2.5 times over budget. And we're still 2 years out. And this is always a problem in public works in Brazil. And, no one really knows where that extra money goes to, which is, again, corruption is a big issue in Brazil.
On the other hand, it may be why the president is so popular.
Yes, well, that also helps when you're running a big
trickle-down
theory
of a different sort. My great thanks to Joseph Leahy, the Brazil Bureau Chief at the Financial Times. Thank you so much for talking about Brazil on today's Backstory.
Thanks very much, Leonard.